the third case this morning, Cohen v. Delta Outsource Group.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Andrew Thomason. I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Patricia Ann Kane. This case arose under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act and involved Delta Outsource Group's sending of an initial or first letter to Ms. Kane, which sought to collect a static debt, a debt whose balance would never, ever increase. The district court should not have dismissed this case under Rule 12b-6 because the court found, and Delta concedes in its briefing, that the use of the temporal qualifier current to describe the debt's balance did not mean that the debt was static. In fact, they concede that, quote, the account may change with the passage of time. Or the amount, I'm sorry, Your Honors, may change with the passage of time. So the question here, the real issue here, is whether change means the debt can reasonably be inferred one of two things, to increase or decrease. The district court found that it was not reasonable to believe that the debt would increase over time, but rather that it would decrease. And it is our contention that, given the case law of this court and clear precedent within it and from other circuits and other courts, that it's reasonable to infer that a debt that was always dynamic and accruing interest in late fees and other charges would continue to do so unless the consumer's instructor told otherwise.
Mr. Thomason, you think you have an uphill battle against the backdrop of our decision in Barnes, which pretty clearly distinguishes the circumstances in Chewway, which are not present here, right? You don't have a direction on this Dunning letter to call an 800 number to get your balance.
On Barnes, no, Your Honor, but Barnes is different because it sought to collect only part of the debt. In Barnes, there was a total amount of debt, but the collector was only collecting the past due amount. And the letter actually went further and instructed the consumer that by paying the current amount due would stop all collection activity. So the consumer would know, any reasonable consumer would know, that by paying that past due amount, that stopped the collection.
Well, so too here.
Well, here, given the context of the debt, consider from Ms. Kane's perspective that this was a high-interest loan that had always been accruing interest, late charges, and other charges. Her first contact from Delta describes the debt as current. And Delta itself concedes that use of the temporal qualifier, current, does not mean the debt is static. The district court, in its decision, also found that use of the word current did not mean the debt was static, and in fact, that the amount of the debt may change over time. It would have been easy to comply, for Delta to comply with the Act. All the Act requires is clarity, and all the Act required them to say was balance or amount due. And this court's precedent in Chewway versus National Action Financial Service instructs that as well, that when you step outside the bounds of Chewway's safe harbor and use extrinsic language, then you run afoul of the safe harbor.
Now, the safe harbors are not written into the statute. Mr. Thomason, I understand your argument to be that the use of the word current implies that the balance could increase, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why isn't the same implication possible from just the use of the present tense verb is. Your account balance is X. Doesn't that imply the same thing?
I don't believe it does, but...
Why not?
Because it's telling you what it is right now.
Currently. Yeah.
And there's nothing that implies that it will be different going in the future. And the word current implies that it is subject to change. And in fact, the defendant conceded that it would change.
And everybody concedes it would change if she made payments and took it down, correct?
Correct. Okay. But
so the implication that you're drawing from the word current, I just don't understand why you can't draw that from the verb is.
I just don't. And Your Honor, it's the court's instruction in Chuway, when collecting a static debt, all you need to do is say the balance and stop there. That's what this court instructed. That's what other courts have found. And this court, 14, 15 years ago in Taylor versus Calvary Financial Services, found that consumers generally understand that their debts, credit card debts that were once dynamic, continue to accrue interest, that they're going up. But that wasn't the case here. This case would never, ever go up, or this amount of this debt would never go up. And the question here is, given the defendant's concession that its use of a temporal qualifier, current, which Chuway admonished against, why would it choose to use that word to describe a static debt when it concedes that it does not describe a static debt, but rather a dynamic one that will change over time? And may it please the court, unless Your Honors have any questions for me, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Catherine Olson on behalf of Defendant Appellee Delta Outsource Group. Notwithstanding that there is no mention anywhere in the Dunning letter as to interest or fees, it is plaintiff's position that a significant fraction of consumers would nonetheless interpret the letter to mean that interest or other fees were accruing. Such an interpretation does not comport with the plain language in the letter when read as a whole. And precedent is pretty clear that bizarre interpretations should be disregarded when analyzing debt collection language under the FDCPA. To be clear, and as I think counsel has made clear, there's no dispute in this case that the amount of the debt that was identified in the letter is accurate. There's also no dispute that any interest or fees were accruing on this debt. The FDCPA does not require any specific terminology to identify the amount of the debt. Thus, the statute envisions that a multitude of phrases could be used to identify the debt and comply with the Act's purpose. Whereas here, the Dunning letter correctly identifies the balance without any mention of interest or fees, I believe the phrase current balance should be found to comply with both Section 1692G and 1692E as a matter of law. Simply speaking, and unlike Chuway, there is nothing in this letter that would suggest that the current balance is different from the amount of the debt. Thus, there is no reason to conclude that an unsophisticated consumer would interpret the phrase as anything else. Indeed, nothing about the word current on its own should suggest future implications, as counsel would have this panel believe, as the word by definition means occurring in or existing at the present time. To conclude, contrary to plaintiff's arguments, use of the phrase current balance on its own does not suggest or threaten that the debt will increase over time due to interest or other charges. Rather, the phrase is clear enough for an unsophisticated consumer to understand it to refer to the amount of the debt. The circuit has long been careful not to conflate lack of sophistication with unreasonableness, and I respectfully request that that policy continue today by affirming the district court's decision.
So what's the point of including the word current?
Well, unfortunately, because this was decided at the pleading stage, there's nothing in the record that would show what the client's actual intentions were for using that word. However, I would believe that the client was merely trying to convey to the consumer in a clear fashion that this is the amount that is presently due today. And as I mentioned, the...
There's a different way of doing that, though, right? You could just put a, you could put amount due, colon.
You could put amount due. You could say due now. You could say balance of the debt. You could say the exact language of the statute, amount of the debt. Some of those, I don't know how a unsophisticated well, I don't know how every unsophisticated consumer would interpret those. As the 2A court themselves mentioned, it is impossible to draft a letter that would be certain to be clear to every single consumer. And that is why this circuit and many courts have decided that a significant fraction of the population has to be misled to find liability. In this case, I don't think there's anything about the word current when considering that word on its own, which is what counsel is asking this court to do. I don't think there's anything that suggests that the balance will increase due to interest and other charges. That's a very specific, I guess, assumption just by using the word current. And like,
but why? I mean, let me ask you about that. Because suppose I have a credit card debt, I don't pay it, I get a letter, a Dunning letter like the one here. And I say, oh, I recognize what that's for. That's for that credit card bill I didn't pay. Don't you think I'm also going to assume, well, that credit card had interest and fees, you know, that attach when I don't pay the bill on a timely basis. And when I see the Dunning letter and I see the word current on there, why is it not reasonable for me to assume, you know what, if I don't pay this thing quickly, it's only going to go up. It's not going to go down or stay the same. Because that's the way a credit card works.
I understand that. And I guess my thought is, if an unsophisticated consumer truly believed that interest or other charges were accruing, and considering that consumers have a poor conception about debt collectors to begin with, I don't think that they would be vague about the fact that interest or other fees are accruing. I think if a person believed the debt collector wanted them to think that interest and other fees were accruing, they would just simply state that. They wouldn't be vague about it. In this case, just the word current, which again, I think cannot be analyzed in isolation. I think you have to read the letter as a whole, and when the letter as a whole does not mention fees or interest, the word current by itself should not suggest or implicate future items occurring on the debt. If there isn't any other questions, again, I just ask that this panel affirm the lower court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. To address a few points, my adversary suggested that there's nothing bizarre or that a significant fraction of the population would not be misled by the term current and believe that it was increasing. But this court, again, in Taylor versus Calvary, said that generally consumers understand that their credit card debts accrue with interest, and courts in other cases, we've cited a few, Islam, you know, have stated that, you know, everyone, even adult, a dimwit, the most unsophisticated consumer understands that credit cards and things like loans, they accrue interest. And where the consumer's experience with a debt of this type is that it's always been dynamic. It's always been
in the body of federal law. Has anybody offered any evidence on this point?
Evidence on the point.
Like a consumer survey of different phrasing of letters.
No, and in fact, and I cannot cite Your Honor a particular case this moment, but I believe that in Chuway they discuss Bartlett versus Heibel and Avila versus Rubin, both Seventh Circuit cases. All of those, including Chuway, only involved a 1692G claim, and they discussed it in the context of confusion being the standard.
Right. It's an empirical question. Right?
Correct. And here we have a 1692E claim as well, but the issue is not one only of confusion, it's of accuracy. And when a consumer's only experience with a debt is that it's always increasing, when a collector continues to describe...
So I gather nobody has ever actually gathered any evidence on this point.
Not that I'm aware of. In those cases discussed that there's no need for evidence because, you can tell from the face of the letter whether it is accurate or not. And here the defendant has in fact conceded that it is inaccurate to describe
it. I don't see that concession in their brief or in their argument.
At section 3,
isn't that just an echoing of what the district court said, that if you pay the bill is going to go down?
Well, Judge Kogan in the Eastern District of New York in the Islam case, a good point. There's no need to tell a consumer that their current balance means that the debt will go down. Everyone knows that if you pay money on a debt, it will go down. Of course that's the result. So current cannot mean that by making a payment, the amount will go down.
No, when you talk about the balance being static, though, and changing, and your adversary having conceded that point, I don't see the concession either. I see the concession that, of course, the balance is going to decrease if there's some kind of installment payment made. But I don't, I mean, maybe I'm missing it, but I don't see the concession extending beyond that.
No, the concession is simply that it will change. At point 3 or section 3.
It could change for interest and fees, and they're not arguing that. It could change if there's an installment payment made. What are the other options?
The other option is that it's increasing as it always did because of interest and other charges.
They're not arguing that. They're not arguing that there's going to be interest and fees or anything.
No, but they did concede that the amount of the
credit
debt,
card debt.
They did concede that the amount of debt may change with the passage of time. And I think it's a bit disingenuous, again, to say that current implies that we'll change over time because you make a payment and it will go down.
Why not? I get notices all the time where a payment may have crossed in the mail. That's normal, right?
If your honors were to affirm the district court's decision, what you will find is that every debt collector, no matter what type of debt they're collecting, a dynamic or static debt, they will always describe it now as a current balance because the subtle.
So it sounds like, counsel, what you're saying is that the statute should be read as requiring the defendant to specify in that initial notice whether the debt is static or not, correct?
It's very easy to do, and most collectors get
it
right.
Does the statute expressly require that?
No, it does not, but somehow, magically, most honest debt collectors do get it right. Debt collectors are told by their clients that this debt is static, it will not accrue interest. And when it does, they use this court safe harbor from Miller versus Michaela to inform the consumer that the amount of the debt will increase and why. And when it's static, they follow Chewy by simply saying balance due or amount of debt. But here, it seems that the collector, and this court was sort of foreshadowed in its decision in Pantoja, has cleverly crafted their letter in a way to subtly get an advantage from the consumer.
Pantoja involved a much sneakier tactic than what we're talking about, the difference between the balance is and the current balance is.
Oftentimes the most effective tactics are not the most obvious.
And there's no evidence anywhere in federal law about whether this is actually deceptive.
They're not. There are decisions on this issue.
That's not my question.
Understood. I'm not aware and could not cite.
Thank you.
Today. Yes, Your Honor.
Your time's up.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.